It's all about the Benjamins.
That's right. For the Hamiltons.
Hey, Hamilton.
Hey, I know that dude.
Fast Times.
Forgot that.
What?
Come on. Oh, my gosh.
I know that dude.
I am a big fan. Mom, here, I'll save this for the podcast.
Okay. This week, we melt down our pennies for scrap. Welcome to the Midwest Peace Process.
Now, ladies and gentlemen,
I have the pleasure to present to you now.
Ladies and gentlemen,
I have the pleasure to present to you
the Midwest Peace Process.
The world is very different now.
The Midwest Peace
To remind
process.
America of the fierce urgency of now. 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 Now.
Welcome to episode 18. Today is February 3rd, 2012. I'm Jerry.
I'm Jeremy.
And I'm Rob.
And we are on location once again.
Can you tell?
We are at our usual haunt, I guess, of JJ Twigs.
A little busier this time.
Yeah. I want to send a shout out to JJ Twigs. Thanks for hosting us again.
This place is going to have a plaque on it in the future. This is where it all started. The revolution began here.
That's right.
And little post-apocalyptic children will come and review it.
Will it be a gold plate?
It might be. It
might be.
Segue.
This week we are continuing our series on the biggest issues facing America. And this week it's my turn to come up with a topic.
Uh-oh.
And my topic is the economy, generally, but more specifically, it's our fiat currency.
Is that a car?
I like the new 500.
How much are those?
Way more expensive than I thought.
Yeah.
Mid-20s, maybe.
Wow.
They're bringing the Dodge Dart back, too.
Oh, sweet.
It's American. Dodge Dart.
Fiat seats, or what are they going with?
I'm not sure. They had one at the St. Louis Auto Show 2 weeks ago, or whenever that was upstairs. I just heard about it then. Okay, so we're rambling a little bit, but let me get back on topic here. I printed my notes, and now I can't read them. The print's too small. It's hell getting old, it really is. So, as we talk about Ron Paul quite a bit here on the show.
We do.
And this is definitely one of his big pet peeves, if you will. Maybe his biggest issue. And probably not one that's, you know, resonating with a lot of Americans during the campaign. But, you know, he's Mr. End the Fed, or at least audit the Fed. But he's also pointed out on numerous occasions that the biggest economic issue in our country is our fiat currency. And for those who don't know, a fiat currency is one that's just made up. It's based on the trust that people have in the government that issues it. So, you know, his contention is that the current model that we have is unsustainable, and that we're currently reaping what we have sown for several generations now. And I say the engine of the American economy was strong enough to withstand this abuse for 100 years, but I think we finally reached our limit and we're on the verge of collapse. I think substantive change is needed to prevent that from happening, and not in the form of bailouts or quantitative easing. Eliminating the Federal Reserve and turning back towards the gold standard will reestablish the world's confidence in America and make the dollar the reserve currency of the world once again.
Do you do you think the globalization has made it unsustainable? Like you said, you know, we've sustained this, we've been able to make this work for about 100 years, but now it's not working.
Well, I think it started way earlier than that. I mean, I think the unraveling began with the Federal Reserve, the creation of the Federal Reserve. But it certainly accelerated. Well, I give two milestones. One was 1933 when Roosevelt basically outlawed gold, private ownership of gold. And the second milestone was 1971 when Nixon finally went off. Yeah. And, you know, a common misconception there, though.
Sure.
Yes.
Yeah, another picture. Thank you.
Yes, please. a common misconception there is that Nixon took us all off the gold standard, but Roosevelt actually took us off the gold standard domestically because people could no longer redeem their notes for
the equivalent amount of gold.
Right. After the Gold Reserve Act of 1934. What Nixon did in 71 was he closed the gold window, which was the way that foreign countries could demand our gold in exchange for the bonds that they had bought from the U.S. When they wanted to cash them in, they would ask for gold. And that was driving the gold price up to the point where it was going to cause our economy to fail. And so, you know, Nixon had to pull back away from that. So let me back up here a little bit. So when banks were first established in this country, they were typically just a place for you to deposit your valuable precious metals or, you know, other things, and they would issue you a note in exchange for that. It was your receipt for the value of whatever that was you deposited, and those notes became currency over time. That evolved over time because there were so many of these notes out there, and it was more convenient. You know, if I wanted to buy something from you, I could just give you my note, sign it over to you, and then you could take the note to the bank and cash it in if you wanted. So that's where, you know, the concept of the note came from. So in 1792, the dollar was fixed by law at 24.75 grains, or about 0.05 troy ounces of gold. Okay? So our dollar was fixed to a set amount of gold. So it's been that way since 1792. In 1837, the coinage was reworked slightly, and the dollar was redefined as 25.8 grains, and that was mainly because the gold coins that were being minted were not pure gold. And that just reflected that fact, that they were like 99.995% pure, which gives us a value of $20.67 per ounce of gold. And, okay, so that was in 1837. That's what a dollar was worth all the way up until 1933, when Roosevelt issued Executive Order 6102, and that they made private ownership of gold illegal.
Why? Well, what was the reason for them doing that?
It was one. They believed that it was prolonging the Depression, and so they wanted to control the gold supply in order to pull us out of that hole.
Hey, so they used a crisis to do something bad?
Thank you.
Yeah.
Does that resonate for our current times?
I know. It's unprecedented.
They thought they were doing something good.
Because they needed to do something.
Yeah, we got to do something. We got to pull ourselves out of this depression that was created by the robber barons.
It's not the robber barons. It's these people that don't want jobs, Jeremy. The robber barons are job creators. Okay, continue.
Okay, so that was in 1933. The very next year, Congress passed the Gold Reserve Act, which changed the value of the dollar in gold from 20.67 to $35. All right, so it devalued the dollar by, I don't know, 60% or something, whatever that is. And so gold was $35 an ounce from then until 1971, when Nixon finally took us off the gold standard. And by 1974, gold was $195 an ounce. And if you guys remember from the 70s, it just continued that climb. And, I mean, it wasn't quite as rapid, but then it was the hostage crisis in Iran that caused gold to go up to $800 an ounce. And it stayed there for quite a while.
Why? Because people wanted gold as a bulwark against changing times?
Yeah.
Is that why?
Yeah. I mean, anytime people get nervous about what's going on in the world, like now...
Shiny things?
And, yeah, now gold is $1,800 an ounce or something.
What they're doing in Iran right now. Have you read what's recently going on there with them guaranteeing a certain interest rate on their own currency, and they're forbidding people to turn in Iranian currency for American dollars or euros, or unless they have a demonstrated need for demonstrated immediate need for foreign currency.
Wow.
In an attempt to secure their own currency.
Right.
And they're also buying precious metals, gold. I wasn't over there. I didn't see it firsthand, but I read a news
So, I would say, I'm not an economist, but I would say that 1971 was kind of the beginning of inflation becoming a serious problem in this country. Now, if you go back and look, and I put a link in the show notes to a site that's got inflation data going all the way back to, I don't know, I didn't notice how many years it went back. It went back well into the last century. But, I mean, the inflation rate was essentially zero all the way up to the 70s, with a few exceptions. There's spikes during, like, World War II, the Korean War, but, you know, it's hovering around 1% or less. I mean, it's actually negative in some years.
So
until the 70s, and then it starts this climb, and it's never gone back down since then.
So then, go ahead, Rob.
Back to my question about Roosevelt. So why did Nixon do it? Why did Nixon take us off the gold standard?
Well, it had been eroding gradually for a couple of decades. In 1961, we made a deal with Europe that we would pool all of our gold. The U.S. and Europe would pool all of its gold in what they call the London Gold Pool, in an attempt to control the price of gold, you know, to keep it stable. And that worked for a little while until France figured out that they could back out of that agreement and start cashing in their bonds again with for U.S. gold.
And, France.
Yeah.
Sacre bleu.
Not for fries, what would they be good for?
And so the gold pool fell apart in 1964. Coincidentally, that was the year we stopped putting precious metals in our coins. Up until 1964, dimes, silver dollars were actually made of silver. All the silver coins had actual silver in them. 1964 is the last year for that. So that problem was just brewing, and
right. So Nixon was more of like a he's like the he's going to end it.
Right. He just inherited that problem.
Am I getting my timeline wrong, or is that about the same time that we made a deal with, was it strictly Saudi Arabia or OPEC in general, that oil would be traded only in American dollars?
I don't know. It could be.
Okay. I'll have to look that up.
Yeah.
That was when the price of oil started skyrocketing. Sorry, go on about
we'd Google that, but we can't because we're on location.
That's right.
Mixing topics here.
since it's not written on my Miller Lite coaster here, I have keep no looking. Idea. Okay, so I said all of that to say this, that an economy that's not based on gold is unsustainable in the long term. That's my thesis here. And I don't think that anything anybody does from this point on is going to fix what's broken with our economy until we make those significant changes. Otherwise, I think we're just rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic.
Is it gold or is it any precious metal, stone, gem?
Yeah, why gold? Why gold?
It's
shiny.
That's what it just has been before.
It was just because it's hard to get, and you got to go. Takes a lot of work to go get some gold out.
Yeah,
it takes a lot of gold to get.
It's scarce.
Copper, silver, anything. So, but
what if we could develop a chemical process to make gold out of
like
other
spend
chemicals?
It out of straw.
Yeah,
to get Rumpelstiltskin back.
Like lead. If we could just figure out how to turn.
I want to start with lead because they're both heavy.
If any of our listeners have figured that out, please send us an email. So, what do you guys? What are your thoughts on that?
I am admittedly not very knowledgeable about economics. Never took an econ class, and I'm not necessarily. I don't consider myself a gold bug. I think I said that before. But I do agree that I'm with getting rid of the Federal Reserve. And if you look at the data, it certainly seems like we were better off on the gold standard. I do know that there are some complaints that gold is not, you can't expand, it's not an expandable, what's the word for that?
Scalable.
It's a scalable currency, you know, it's not, for backing a currency, it's not liquid enough, not fluid enough, that if you need more currency, you can't get liquidity when you need it.
Right. I've heard that before, but I guess there's an essay. I'll try to find it, put a link in the show notes. A columnist that I read quite often, his name's Vince Aprinowitz. He wrote about this several years ago about how his grandfather took a $20 gold piece, and this was, I don't know, whenever his grandfather was a young man, so probably, you know, the 20s, 30s, something like that, took a $20 gold piece, you know, which was essentially a 1 ounce coin, and went and bought a suit, because that's what suits cost then, $20. And it was a really nice suit, you know. And so he uses that as an example, because when he was writing this, gold was like $400 an ounce at the time. And he was like, if you took an ounce of gold, you could go buy a really nice suit for 1 ounce of gold. You know, and that was present day. His point being that, you know, gold kind of tracks...
An ounce is still an ounce.
Gold kind of tracks the value of all the goods and services in the marketplace. No matter what its value, that's, you know...
You get two suits if you go to Kmart.
You like the way you look. So, just see how far back we want to go. See, it doesn't sound like you're agreeing with the idea that that currencies are kind of fake entities. They're value placed on some object. But we're okay with that. We're okay with like because isn't gold? I mean, it's just an element that's heavy. And sometimes it's shiny. But you're okay, as long as we all agree on something of value, of something that's rare, that you can't just multiply via, you know, some kind of legislation or fiat from above or some Federal Reserve politician. That it's not so much that it's, I mean, we could say the currency is going to be based on, you know,
based on wood.
Wood, yeah, or pebbles that are shaped like eggs or something.
Or, like, during the Roman Empire, it was salt.
Right, salt.
Before they knew how salt was made.
Alchemy, I'm telling you, it's the way to go. But the problem now is that you have perhaps political entities or powerful people
adjusting the this value via thought experiments or something, not via mining or...
Right. You know. Instead of 100 years of stability with your dollar equal 35, you know, $35 equal an ounce of gold, now you have this wildly complex system that, you know, is based on so many different variables. And, you know, who knows? Who knows who's controlling all of those knobs now?
I mean, are we just growing up that you know, that value is different than stuff you can get out of a mountain?
You know, what if our currency system...
Like, because we're not really... Are we actively mining for gold now?
I mean,
we are?
Oh, yeah.
The government? Is the government?
Well, I don't know if the government is, but plenty of private companies, especially now with it being worth $1,800 an ounce.
And I can see the government really getting into it, like saying, sorry, Yosemite, you're Yosemite gold mine right now. I think there's
something... No, they wouldn't do that. There's probably a ban on it. Like, well, can't drill there, can't dig there.
That's right.
It is nice. Disturb the spotted owl. It's got a mate. It's got to make some babies. Let's make spotted owl eggs our currency. Those are apparently...
Ooh,
really
those valuable. Are very rare. I forgot where I was going with that. I got confused about spotted owl babies.
That's nowhere important. You were talking about what is valuable. Have we grown up?
Right, and right.
What's valuable to us now?
Right, is this just the benefits of us as a modern culture getting more modern? Not benefits. I don't want to say call it a benefit. It doesn't sound like much of a benefit.
Yeah, we all go into tremendous debt and our economy collapses. It's the benefit of us growing up.
All right, I'll throw out this question. That question wasn't very good. What about this one? Who's got gold?
China's buying a lot. Jerry has some. I have not.
No, I mean, I don't have a lot. I want to hear about Jerry's gold reserves, gold member over there. I mean, like countries and regions.
Where is it? Okay, Yukon, the Yukon territory.
I don't like the Canadians. They're really good at curling, but I'm kind of into curling.
I like curling too.
I need, yeah.
We make granite stones our currency.
For Christmas, I got a curling lesson.
Like the Yap Island currency, those big 6-foot round stones with the hole in the middle.
So back to who has gold.
Right.
Who else has gold? I don't know where all the gold mines are, but...
South Africa, pretty big in gold.
They have everything there. Diamonds, gold.
I mean, are we speaking
United States?
Nevada is still one of the largest silver producers in the world.
Well, California.
It is the silver state.
The Golden Rush. The Golden State.
I don't know where I'm going.
It's a pretty complex topic.
I mean, I hear what you're saying. I think the themes are that we just have like a distrust of the system, that there's knobs being twirled by people that don't have connections to what value is, but they're twisting knobs of inflation, and they're going to affect twisting knobs of inflation and saving and things that affect me, but they're not accountable to me.
Right.
Well, it's even worse than that. It's even worse than that, really, because, I mean, you can say they're twisting those knobs, and maybe they are.
I do like to say that.
Maybe they are, and maybe they're not. You know, like the unemployment figures that were just published today. How do we know those are true?
Right.
I mean, where do those come from?
Right.
They come from a bunch of, you know, people who work at the BLS. How do we know they're not all Obama supporters?
Oh,
they're lying
right,
about the numbers because
they
want to make him look good in an election year.
I'll tell you a story.
Granted, that's kind of cynical, but... I mean,
well, we got Jeremy, the conspiracy theorist.
Or it's just the way it's counted is not representative. So, but then, okay, we've been doing it the same way, so the index is correct. Whether the number is true, the relationship is correct, maybe.
Conspiracy theories. This is the conservative conspiracy, that conspiracy theory that matches the liberal conspiracy theory about oil prices. Because my brother cracks me up. You know, we at New Year's every year, we do these predictions for the year. What's going to be the unemployment rate? We pick some silly low number, you know, especially around election time, you know, like it's gonna like falsely, oh, like a little dig at me. Thanks, bro. But that's the dig, you know, the same thing happens with oil prices, you know, when W was president, it's election time, ooh, suddenly oil prices are now really low and everybody can go on vacation. It's not so bad, right?
There are plenty of economists who completely disagree with, you know, what the published, established inflation rate is today. You know, because they're always saying it's what, 4%, 3.5%, and you know, there's plenty of evidence that it's upwards of 10%. And but you're not going to hear that from the government. You're not going to hear that from the Federal Reserve.
Right. Because people would be losing their minds if they heard that. Well, even though they might not know what that means.
And if you have a cola, not a Coke, but isn't a cola based on the cost of living allowance? Isn't that based on the inflation rate?
Yeah.
So some incentive in
one of the changes that Ben Bernanke has made since he took over the Fed, they are no longer publishing what they call the M3, right, which is...
I don't know what that is. What are you guys nodding? A lot of nodding and...
The M3 is the number. I mean, it's the number of dollars out there in the system.
Like paper.
More than that. That's M1. Dollars, coins. That's M1. M3 includes dollars, savings accounts, and foreign held. They call them euro dollars. It's foreign held American currency.
But
so they stopped publishing that. About the time they started doing all these bailouts.
Yeah. Well, the point is, if you have those numbers, you can compute inflation yourself.
Gotcha.
But that's they don't a, want right. you computing inflation right. yourself.
Right, because you would know how many dollars there are. You'd be like, wow, the M3 has gone up. I can do that calculation.
We don't want you to have to do all that math. Figure it out and let you dividing. Know what it is.
I'm going to take a little break while Rob reads the definition of M1 and 2 and M3.
I thought these were highways in England.
Yeah, we can take a little break. We'll be right back.
I'm so wild, baby, happy being alive. I'm so wild about you, honey, makes me without you all for the time. I will fall for your loving until I lose my breath. I spend most of my life now dreaming dreams about you. I spend most of my life now dreaming, baby, of you. Now what would I do if they ever come true? Still my answer is yes to whatever you say. Yeah, all my answer must be yes to.
All right, we're back. Rob has read the book.
We ordered some food.
That's right, we ordered some pretzel bites.
Calculated inflation of pretzel bites.
Yeah, so what we were talking about while we were gone there for a minute was the Fed has made a change in recent years. They're no longer publishing what's known as the M3 number, which is something that, you know, the layman needs to compute what inflation is. And
do you feel like inflation is 10%?
Well,
in your daily transaction?
I don't know. I mean, that's hard to say, because I don't think it changes fast enough for you to really notice. I think it's a lot more gradual.
It's the boiling frog.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, though, beef is really expensive. I know that. We'll try to buy a steak.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty easy to look at, like, the price of a gallon of milk. That's definitely gone up for the last 10 years.
Right. I think it's just endlessly going up.
But, you know, it's hard to point at what the cause is of those kinds of things. Like, is it gas prices? Because gas prices will cause all that stuff to go up, too.
Right.
But why does gas prices go up? Well, who knows?
That's Jeremy's topic for next week.
That's some voodoo right there. I don't pretend to understand that.
pretend to understand any of this. All I know is it seems arbitrary to me. It isn't.
But okay, so here's the problem with inflation, really. We lived in this country for hundreds of years with no inflation, right? Virtually none. Certainly not enough that it was noticeable. I mean, it wasn't something you made allowances for, you know. And now it is something you notice, and it's worse than that because inflation is a tax on your savings.
Right.
You can't just sock cash away in the bank for your entire life and expect it, you know, like...
Well, especially with the current savings rates.
Well, yeah, nobody's saving any money anyway. But even if they were, you put $1,000 away now, 10 years from now, it's not worth $1,000 anymore. So, you know, and that's one of the things Ron Paul is often heard to say is that it's a tax on your savings. So even the people who are saving, you know, being good citizens and saving their money like they're supposed to, they're getting shafted.
I don't think most people understand when he says that. I don't think that's meaningless to most.
Because they don't save money?
Well, that might be part of it.
Yeah.
It's like
savings. What's that?
Savings. No, I declare the $7 in interest I get every year. How's it, you know?
Right. Yeah, I think people get it. I think people don't think long term.
Well, that's true too.
And even smart, wise, good citizens don't really think of 10 years from now. It's hard to imagine 10 years from now. We'll all have hover cars. At that point, government provided UN provided hover cars.
Oh my gosh! And they'll all be the little powder blue, just like those stupid little powder blue helmets that the UN guys wear.
Those are bad. When you see a powder blue helmet, look out.
It reminds me of when I was in boot camp. The drill instructor saw the year we were getting out on our ID card, you know, and they were like, "Well, you guys are Buck Rogers Marines. They're not even going to have cars anymore when you get out. We'll all be flying around in spaceships."
Not quite. Just send a text message, though.
No, I still don't have a jetpack.
No.
I've been hearing I was going to get a jetpack since the 70s.
I think a jetpack. Like,
there's a good song about that.
Fundamentally dangerous.
What? No, there is a guy, though, that... Jetman?
Oh, yeah, Jetman. Yeah. No, I'm talking about the, you know, the kind of take off the ground. Vertically.
But that's
a lot. He's got to jump out of a plane.
That's the wing guy. I'm talking about, there's a guy who has flown with a jetpack.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
That's a lot of heat right by the Tootsies down there, isn't it?
It doesn't have to be heat.
What's he shooting out of there?
I mean,
unicorns and rainbows?
Yeah. I think it's a lot of Obama speeches that he plays and all the hot air just rips him right
off. Those are powerful.
Nice. I gotta bash Obama more to get Rob riled up.
Just fire me up. Yeah. So I mentioned about people not thinking long term, but one thing I don't understand is, like, Ron Paul has energized the youth. Like the people who are all Ron Paul supporters are young people.
Right.
But
young people
did.
Young people don't think about long term. Like, young people are crazy. So why, how does he fire up the youth? It's a puzzle, a quandary, a contradiction. I mean, you got
this. Why do you say that?
I say it.
Obama did the same thing.
But Obama appeals to a different thing. He's not talking about inflation on your savings being the fact that when you're old, you're going to have to pay more for milk. I mean, that's not what Obama
was saying.
But
he was saying, we have hope. We're going to change the future. And, you know, hope
the Ron
we can
Paul,
believe in.
The Ron Paul message is not a message of hope. The Ron Paul message is...
Yes, it is.
We need, well, long-term hope. The Ron Paul message is that we need to let this system collapse and crumble so it can be born anew of a system of liberty.
No, I don't think he says we need to let it crumble. I think it's we need to tear this down because it's not working. That's how I would interpret it. But maybe he's actually said what you just said.
Well,
no, but I think he's more, let's tear this down. It's not working.
I think he has said that it's going to crumble if we don't do anything about
it.
And so young people are 21 out of college and thinking,
I don't think he wants that to happen. I think he wants everybody to wake up and embrace change.
Is that what it is? That it's a change message?
It's a Hopi changing kind of thing.
It's a Hopi changing.
I think we talk more about Ron Paul than the national media does.
Yeah, no question.
But the national, services that poll national media to see how much we're talking, they're tuned in to the MVP. So we're kicking his numbers up.
Be.
He's got the MVP ball.
They're down with MVP.
You know me.
Yeah, I don't really see why it's a youth message. I like it. For me, if I was a young person, I would be excited. What excites me about Ron Paul is that he's purely consistent with himself. He's a self-consistent person. Right. That he kind of has a set of principles, and he lets those principles take him where they may go.
He's
right?
Not pandering. Like,
right.
Like,
right.
It sounds like I'm picking on Obama this episode. Maybe I am.
Perhaps
but
you are.
I just had the whole speech where he, as a Christian, let me quote the Bible here, but I mean that felt just like so pandering to me. He was going for a statement that he, in 2 months, he could look back on and point to and say, look, see, I'm
right.
a Christian. There,
right.
You know, I said it in that speech, so therefore...
I will say that pandering is not a particularly Obama-specific thing,
or
a Democrat-Republican thing, but I will say that Ron Paul doesn't do a whole lot of pandering.
No, that's part of his appeal for me,
right.
is that he's not into that. He doesn't... He has substance, and therefore... Nobody latches on to him.
Right.
It's like, you know, in the high school, the girl wants to date the guy who's the bad boy. And
that's right.
Tell her what she wants to hear. And then
that's right.
All of a sudden,
so
he forgets her name. But, Ron Paul, he's a little band geek, and he's loyal and going to be there for her.
I feel like this is a personal message for you.
He just wants to be loved.
Hey, here's a topic that little side topic. Like, do you think that Rand Paul, the reason, I completely buy the theory that Ron Paul will not go third party because it would destroy his son's chances for the future. Do you think Rand Paul will like, you know, be a major player in the future, 10 years from now, 15 years from now?
I don't know. I don't know enough about him to say that. I think this whole thing with TSA, I think that might influence his future more than it seems right now.
But
if
I'm
perceived
talking big,
as a stunt.
Nobody's going to remember TSA. I'm talking like 10, 15 years. I'm talking big picture. You think that's the plan?
Is the torch going to be passed
from
father to son?
Right.
I think it will in the minds of... You know, Tea Party supporters.
It's more of a match than a torch right now.
Because he is certainly, I mean, of all the people who proclaim themselves Tea Party candidates, I think he's the highest ranking of them all. I don't know of any others that made it to the Senate. You know, I think the rest of them are all in the House of Representatives. So, yeah, I mean, I think the potential is there. And they certainly don't differ in philosophy.
No. I don't differ in philosophy from my dad either. I believe everything he says.
Oh, please.
Aren't you guys good sons, too?
It's like the movie.
But yeah, I do think...
Ooh, those are hot.
The pretzel bites came, listeners. Are you tempted? Come
to
JJ Twigs.
They're holding my toasted ravs.
That's right. Yeah, I think part of the Ron Paul thing is he's got the message, but nobody can really picture a Ron Paul president. That'd be
good if he'd get some media coverage.
That'd be like Gandalf presidency. Wear like white robes and declare things. But that's not to say that his message can't be passed on to the youth of 2030 when the acid rain comes and the clouds are passing over. We might vote for a guy named for the with a first name the same as the last name of Ayn Rand.
Wow,
Fountainhead moment.
Really...
Are you guys named, going to name a kid after Ayn Rand?
No. Yeah, I'm going to name one Alice.
We almost named my daughter Dagny.
Dagny? Like Dagny and Lacey?
Like the girl in...
Like Dagny Taggart from Atlas Shrugged.
Oh, how about that? Yeah, I remember that name now. You got this close. John Galt.
Alright. So since we were kind of talking about the campaign, Mitt Romney won Florida.
He did.
Any other...
He has Donald Trump behind him now. Yeah.
Man, what an endorsement.
I would have run away from that.
Yeah. You can't.
Why does Donald Trump think he's... Relevant,
yeah, I don't know. Can't figure that out.
Well, I like to wonder if the Democrats can play that in any way. I mean, can they play a Mitt Romney, Donald Trump endorsement to any advantage? I mean, people don't really think of themselves as Donald Trump. You know, he's like, I don't really identify with Donald.
So, a lot in common. I just heard today that the Gingrich campaign leaked the story that Trump was going to endorse Gingrich. Mm-hmm. And then he came out and didn't.
Sounds like something they would do.
I don't know. So what do we think? Is Gingrich done?
Yes.
I think I like... I'll tell you something that gives me Democrat glee.
Yeah,
that's right. Is the people like okay? So Gingrich wins South Carolina. Like, what's he gonna win from now on? And then the real hardcore conservatives, like, they don't like any of these guys. So, I mean, at this point to the real center of the nation, you could have a Tea Party rally, you could get Michelle Bachmann all fired up. When you go around to a Republican primary, I mean, she's gonna get 3%. You know, it's just not gonna happen.
Right.
So we are more centery than we tend to think we are, which pleases me.
I think I've always thought that the people in general are more centrist, but pushed from one side to the other by media coverage and by elections to make a decision.
Right. Yeah, so it's interesting. It's not really a Tea Party rise. You know, as the Tea Party gets larger, they're just more fired up. And they're going to make a lot more noise. But I would say the Tea Party hasn't affected this primary in any way.
So you guys going to vote in the Missouri primary?
Do we have to vote?
Even though it's pointless because it's doesn't count?
Was it all voting?
No, I mean, it literally doesn't count. Which... You know, to me, it's like, how much money are we going to spend conducting that vote? And they've already decided that they're not going to use the results. They're going to have a caucus next month.
Is any other state doing that order where they primary and then the caucus? I read that when I was looking at the list, the schedule of primaries and caucuses in red and Missouri. That makes no sense, but...
Is it because Missouri sucks?
Probably part of it.
It would be a factor.
Well, Missouri lost their bellwether status. That was a big deal.
Was that when McCain won?
Yeah. And so...
We didn't win by that much.
No, but the point is... As Missouri goes, so goes the presidency, and that's no longer the case.
We'll get it back. Maybe that's what we need to do. We need to promote ourselves as a bellwether state. Get a lot more media. I always wonder what happens to these states.
A born-again bellwether.
That's right.
Yeah, I mean, I think about, what if you're a news station in Tampa? Like, do you just kind of chill out for 3 years and wait for election year? When you get flooded with dollars for, I mean, what is their income look like?
over the course of a 4-year stint. I mean, you got what? All right,
Pencil Pepsi comes, and they're like, hey, can I put a soda ad on? Okay, you know.
And then every 4 years, they're like, oh my God, I need to buy advertising. And you got this flood of like national money coming to your state. I mean, you must just like hang out for 3 years and just wait for the cash to come in.
Could be.
I don't know what that's like.
I don't either. I never have a flood of cash coming in.
Oh, maybe not so much Florida, but like an Iowa, you know, an Iowa station or something. You know, for a little while there, you're all that.
I'd buy that more than
that. Right. That's a lot of money. That's a lot of millions flowing into commercials.
Kind of like Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania.
Very timely.
Well, they make all their money in one day a year, right? Right. Kind of like if you run a fireworks stand.
I need to get into that. Maybe create my own holiday.
Yeah.
Something be a big deal.
If you can get Hallmark on board,
You're
all set.
Greeting cards, that's where it's at. That should be our currency.
I like the idea of like prepping for a month, big day, take the rest of the year off.
Yeah,
that's how you do it. You think Punxsutawney Phil is like really working hard?
Get your chicks for free.
I don't want to learn to play guitar or anything. That's too hard.
So, Facebook IPO, what do you guys think about that?
I think that plays into all this pretty well because the regular guys like us aren't going to be able to benefit or profit from this IPO.
It'll be months before any of us will be able to buy a share.
Yeah, common stock and therefore not at the low price. The
right.
Guys who are already millionaires and billionaires are getting in. Yeah.
Right.
I think it's going to be a total failure. I think Facebook will go the way of MySpace in a number of years.
Yeah. That's what I think.
I don't know why. I don't have any data. But when I'm on Facebook, it just makes me angry and mad. Like when I'm on Google Maps or I'm on a Google product, I have a sense of well-being inside myself. You don't?
I don't. I feel like Google is.
Don't click that Google Plus. It's going to make you crazy.
No, they're changing their apps now. At least on my phone. Now I can't turn off my locator service and still have the same functionality I had before. It really bothers me. I feel like they're weaseling in.
That's how they do it. Free market system. But I think Facebook is so... The best quote I've heard about Facebook is that Facebook was created by a college kid in college to network with other young college kids. And it hasn't advanced past that type of ethic. Like, it's still like, how many friends can you make from college, you know?
Right. Right.
It hasn't become a useful medium, at least in the States. I mean, I think if you're in Egypt, you're trying to organize a protest and create an Arab Spring, and I'm just taking pictures in my bathroom of myself with my shirt off. Oh, yeah.
I'll put a link in the show notes. Speaking of Facebook, be sure you visit our Facebook page.
Hey, it is good for that.
Facebook.com/MidwestPeace. Hit that like button. Leave us a comment. You can also send us an email at feedback@MidwestPeaceProcess.com or just visit our website, MidwestPeaceProcess.com, and leave a comment there. We'd love to hear from you. Is this a good time to segue into listener feedback?
It is.
Maybe. Just thinking of something, why it was a good idea to get rid of the Federal Reserve. We didn't really talk about that. Talk about going back on the
All right, but before we get there, I want to ask, like, I don't even know what the Federal Reserve thinks it's trying to do.
Well, Bernanke just said this week, they're going to take care of the U.S. economy. Don't worry.
Don't worry.
They're going to take care of it.
I like that.
What have they been doing this whole time? They've really been taking care of us.
Here's the problem with that. The Federal Reserve's charter is not to protect the economy as a whole. It's only to protect the dollar. That is their sole purpose for existing. I mean, if you accept that they're legitimate at all, which I don't, the one thing they're supposed to do is protect the dollar. And they don't do that. So,
do you think they're illegitimate and bad at the same time?
Yeah. I'm sure everybody's heard, you know, the old story about the Federal Reserve. They print $100 bill, it costs them a penny to print it, but they sell it to the government for $100. Mm-hmm. You know, the government pays them $100 for that $100 bill. So, you know, that's a pretty good business if you get into that.
But then they say, well, we transfer, you know, we're only allowed to have this certain amount of profit, and the rest is transferred back to the U.S. Treasury. There's still shady business going on. There's money going overseas that we don't hear about. There's
right, $7 trillion worth.
Yes, and somehow that's still our problem. And why? What is the need for the Federal Reserve to act as if? Why can the U.S. Treasury not be this entity? And I read that. Well, then you would have to take over all the banks. Well, no, why? I don't see why you would, because if the Federal Reserve was truly federal, it would still be able to lend money to these other banks. It would still be able to set a rate, an interest rate, and these other banks would you know, be prime rate plus whatever to make their own profits.
Right. Well, why do you even need a central bank setting that rate?
Right.
I mean, the prime rate could be, based on whatever the market will bear, just like airline prices right now, you know, or gas prices, or, you know, whatever. You don't really need a central authority setting that prime rate. That's too much power to put in the hands of a small number of people, and we are talking a small number.
And they spin it to say, we're doing this to prevent problems and prevent panics, but that's what they sell to us. That's not really the reality of it.
The Federal Reserve Board is made up of, I think, 13 people. It's the chairman of all 12 banks, and then whoever the chairman of the board itself is.
Frank Sinatra?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's alive there running the show.
Little blue eyes.
So, I mean, that's an awesome amount of power given to that small number of people.
Yes.
And, you know, put my tinfoil hat on for a second. It's not just those 13 people. It's all of their friends, you know, in the Trilateral Commission and the Bilderbergers and the Council of Foreign Relations and, you know.
And the people who get these loans that we don't hear about.
I don't honestly believe that all those groups wield the power that, you know, some people on the internet claim they do. But the reality is, you know, there are members of those organizations who are world leaders. You know, they're heads of state. They're owners of the largest banks in the world. They're industrialists who have more money than anybody else. And when they all get together and talk about how they think the world should work, well, you know what? That's the way the world works.
Yeah, and it's not always friendly to the U.S.,
right,
obviously. This International Monetary Fund is another wing of essentially the same system. And I thought it was interesting when Italy was having... Was it Italy? No, that was Spain. Berlusconi? Spain,
it's
or Italy?
It's Italy.
Italy, yeah. Rich Person. He was resisting pressure from the IMF to take money to rescue the country, and you know, everybody's beating on him and trying to get him out of there, trying to get him to resign. And I was thinking how interesting that he was probably doing something that was more beneficial by resisting a bailout from the IMF and then becoming a debtor to them.
Yeah.
But naturally, he fell, and there they are.
Yeah.
So what's going to happen? Predictions, then. Ron Paul becomes president, ends the Fed in 2 years. Done. Rick Perry makes a rise, just executes the Fed Up book.
Right.
Written by his staffers. And
Rick Perry would be Secretary of Transportation or something. That's about all he's qualified for.
I'll tell you what. So what is going to happen? It just continues on? Everybody gets their own... I mean, this whole Federal Reserve concept isn't a uniquely American thing, right? I mean, do other Euro nations have their own little goofy boards? And...
I'm not sure. Japan does not... they're an actual, like, a federal bank. It's a government bank, I believe.
Well, so anybody that belongs to the Eurozone, there is a central bank that regulates the Euro.
Right.
So they have the same thing. It's on a, I'd say, a larger scale, really, because there's 27 countries in the Eurozone, so...
Well, that's obviously worked really well.
So we're doing well. We're not them, right? We don't have the Canadian, U.S., Mexico zone.
And NAFTA.
NAFTA. So what is going to happen? Nothing? It's bigger and crazier?
Bigger
or do we recover from this?
And crazier.
What if we recover from this? This might be like Sega Genesis in the 80s, you know? Maybe 15 years from now, it'll be 20, whatever, I can't add 10. 2022. That's right. And people are like, remember when we were worried about the Fed? That was so 2012.
I don't know. It doesn't. There's no evidence that any decisions are being made to
make it better.
To make it better.
Right.
I haven't heard one. You ever listen to 97.1?
FM Talk?
Yeah, FM Talk. What's the guy's name? I can't think of this show. It's on in the afternoon.
Dave
Glover. There you go. There's a guy on there, some doctor.
I don't even listen to it. I know the guy's name.
What kind of doctor he is, but my brother was telling me about it. And this guy is a way... You think we talk about conspiracy. He's a real tinfoil hat. And he said there will not be a presidential election this year. Or if there is... If there is a presidential election, it'll be significantly delayed. And I didn't hear the show, so I don't know what his reasoning was, but he's...
Whatever. In the Mayan calendar, whatever. I like to think about your Fed chatter and what's really going to happen. I think maybe I'll buy that we're on a precipice. And if things, the only way things are going to change if things go further and further down the tubes.
Yes.
But if things go better and better, I think it'll seem nice and quaint and thoughtful that we thought about today.
But it's only prolonging the agony.
Yes. Did you see there was some research done? They correlated the amount of laughter in the Fed meetings with the housing bubble. They were reading the minutes from their meetings and how often the stenographer cited laughter as occurring during the meeting, and it increased as the housing prices increased.
That's because the stenographers get better and better houses. Yeah,
I kind of attribute that to the link somebody sent around where you can attribute climate change to the funding of the National Science Foundation.
Or why do housing prices match this mountain range? I love that.
Yeah. Correlation does not equal causation. Yeah, I think one of our listeners provided us that, actually. Listener Eric. All right, Super Bowl predictions.
kind of have a feeling the Patriots are going to do it.
Yeah? Yeah.
I say Giants win because it's never who I think is going to win, so I'll go with Giants.
Yeah, I think the Giants are going to pull off another win like they did 4 years ago.
And I was...
Because we seem to repeat the same nonsense every 4 years in this country.
Yeah, and that's a good one. 4 years ago, my daughter was born in the hospital on Super Bowl Sunday. Or it was Super Bowl Sunday. And while my wife was laboring, I was in the chair watching the Super Bowl, and then I fell asleep.
That's a good one. How'd
that go for you?
That's right.
Still paying for
but
it.
That's right. I came through in the clutch at the end, though. I put my little booties on and a little robe. I was ready to go.
Did you do your little end zone dance?
That's right.
You didn't spike the
kid. I didn't spike the kid.
That's right.
Jerry's studying intently.
I'm looking at...
What's the listener feedback?
We don't have a whole lot this week. And actually, this is feedback from episode 16.
I feel bad, Rob. I didn't get any feedback either.
That's
nobody
right.
cares about authority.
Our listener Nathan says jury rights are not a natural right. A natural right is a right that man has because of his nature, that he can reason. Jury rights are a type of political right. A political right is an artificial or unnatural right created by the formation of a government and for the purpose of participating in that government. Other examples of political rights are voting rights and rights to petition the government. What do you guys think about that?
It sounds right.
I don't think I was in on the episode when we discussed rights. I said episode 16 of the year, but I should have been there.
Well, that's actually what he said it was from. Maybe he was wrong which episode it was, but...
Well, we did get into it at the end, I guess, that 1 week, but I hadn't been in the original.
Yeah. Okay, well, so... I'm actually going to disagree with him a little bit on this, because I think your right to a jury trial is a natural right. And here's why I say that. Because if I'm in a dispute with you, Jeremy, there's no way that either one of us can come up with an unbiased judgment on who is, you know, correct. We need a third party to act as the, you know, the mediator or the arbitrator or whatever. And, you know, in some cases, that third party needs to be an entire jury of people. You know, if it's a serious enough offense, you don't want a single person deciding your fate. And, you know, you want...
Especially if the only three people you have, the one is related to one of the two conflicting parties.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, I guess if there's a dispute that needs to be resolved within a society, and define society however you like... I know I would feel better having a jury of 12 people, or maybe even more than that, decide, you know, the morality issues in play.
Bring a little survivor aspect into that and say, well, you can, to decide, you have a race, or you build the fire the fastest. That has nothing to do with who is more correct.
Right. Yeah. And I think that, you know, given my beliefs on justice, how a justice system works, justice is served when the victim is made whole. And, you know, if you're the victim and I'm the perpetrator, that's not going to happen if it's left up to the two of us. There has to be some third party, and I'm going to put my trust in a jury before I'm going to put it in, you know, somebody else who might have a conflict of interest. A randomly selected jury of my peers, though, you know, I could trust them to render a decision.
It's got its problems, but it's the best option I could think of.
Yeah.
Like, what if we had elected judges, you know? What would that be like? That'd be crazy.
They do have elected judges.
Well,
but they only decide on important things.
But yeah, what if we had one guy who would decide all cases in your town, and you had to, and there was a political campaign to find out, you know, who that guy was? Think how that would turn out.
Well, that was a system in a lot of societies throughout history.
Right.
You know, you had a tribal chieftain of some kind, and he decided those disputes. And he didn't always get it right, but you didn't have any choice. He was the chief.
Yeah, you think people aren't involved in politics now? Like, what if you would just, like, could just appoint somebody via election of how they would decide? And they would just decide any way they wanted. No jury anymore. You would just have some person.
He's the decider, you know, the ultimate judge.
Right.
The decider.
You think there'd be some super PAC money into that?
Was that a George Bush reference?
That's right. The strategy on being a decider.
I think my opponent's figures are inaccurate. You guys got anything else?
Need some more pretzel bites.
Some more beer.
Well, dude, I guess so. Do you want to talk about that world tax?
We can.
That a little too...
Sure.
I didn't read the whole article. So
it's a good thought experiment. I mean, it's not going to happen, but it's good.
It better not happen. That's ridiculous.
Tell us about it, Jeremy.
I'll put a link in the show notes.
I already put... I put a link in about something.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, tell us about the world tax. I'm into it. Tell us about it.
Is that the biggest holders of U.S. debt?
Yeah. So that's something totally different.
Okay.
It was another UN harebrained idea to implement
like saving those
world tax.
Stopping that genocide.
But you're being redundant there.
Yeah. On all financial transactions. So that they could establish essentially a base salary for
every human being
of the world. Well, they didn't even say every human being. I don't think it was like all the poverty stricken of the world. So you think to be stricken with poverty before you qualify. You know, they didn't say how you'd qualify for this.
And I'm into it.
Establish health care. Rob, you're not. Shouldn't sit next to me anymore if you're serious right now, because that's a world tax, really.
It is.
You want some of your tax dollars going to the Somali pirates.
It's just so much like the conservative wet dream of conspiracies and bad things. Like, not only is your local property tax a theft, but your local city tax is a theft, and your city and your state and your federal. Now the world's coming on to give your money to Haiti.
Am I going to get to vote on who the world government is?
No.
Then that's the very foundation of the United States, where you live, Rob. You're really okay with this world
no,
tax
I think it's,
idea?
No, I think it's a terrible idea, but it's awesome to get fired up about it.
You laugh. Pretty soon we'll be talking about the damn world tax rate, along with our federal tax rate and our state and local tax rate.
It's not going to happen. And I'll tell you why. Because the United States controls the United Nations. Ultimately, we are the biggest contributor. They live on our soil. We have a lot more influence in the UN than any other country in the world. And that is not something that is going to benefit the US.
Right.
We are going to end up contributing more to that than anybody else. And we already contribute more to, you know, foreign aid, relief agencies, you name it. I mean, charity is one of the things America does the most of in the world. So,
if there's profit to be had there, then who's to say that wouldn't?
Well, who's going to profit from it, though, really?
Because
I mean, the UN's not going to spin off some corporation that's going to, you know, administer all of this aid, they're going to hand it to NGOs all around the world. And those NGOs are already nonprofits.
It's not a real, this is not a real threat to the real world. But it is, it does like excite the conservative, like little
no,
tingly
I wouldn't
hairs.
Say it excites the conservative. I would say it excites wise-minded people who.
Yeah. It's illogical.
Right. Well, sure. It's not going to happen. It's not a. I'm just telling you that the people of a lefty mindset read that article and go, silly UN. People of a conservative mindset go, oh my God, it's happening. Tinfoil hat. We're in a world of trouble.
I tend to believe that if there was going to be a one world government, we would have had it already.
Why do you say that?
For the same reason we were talking earlier about all the, the people of influence that are, you know, parts of these secret organizations. They have these meetings, and it seems like if they. If they had decided already that there was going to be a one-world government, we'd have one.
Or maybe we already have one, but it's...
Yeah, it's just
it's a secret shadow government.
It's one of my favorite quotes from the movie Gross Point Blank. You guys seen that movie?
I have, but I don't remember.
I have not.
It's a good movie. It's not political, but one of the main character, John Cusack, plays an assassin. And he's trying to explain what he does to his high school girlfriend, who he goes, but it's their 10-year high school reunion. So she's freaking out because she finds out he's an assassin, and he starts trying to explain how he got into it, and he says, well, you know, I work for the government, and she says something about what governments. He's like, well, you know, governments are just a public relations ploy at this point, but...
Yeah, there's a lot of truth to that.
There you go.
I don't know.
It's not going to happen.
But if
about the UN,
they'll never tax us. They'll never tax our income.
They won't do
tax
that.
Our inheritance. They'll never.
Yeah, never say never.
Never tax our tea and our.
From here, all fired up about tea.
They'll never.
Isn't it weird the explorers?
They'll never ban alcohol.
One thing, take away our guns.
One thing I remember about history class is how goods like tea and coffee were like prime goods.
Yeah.
I don't understand that. Well, now I understand it because I love tea and coffee. But I was always like, yeah, and the settlers needed their tea and coffee. I'm like, just deal without it, you know? Just get your bread and your water and your corn.
Because they were a bunch of drug addicts.
That's right. And when they said you couldn't have your coffee, man, that milking that cow at 6 a.m. when the rooster crows... A little harder.
Yeah.
The world
runs
built on mind-altering substances.
That's right. It's caffeine in the morning and alcohol at night.
Caffeine, alcohol,
opium.
America was founded to grow tobacco. Forget all that stuff you were taught about religious freedom.
Right.
The Jamestown colony was founded to make money.
That's right. That's how we roll.
Remember, the dollar is a U through an S. The dollar sign.
Ooh. Nice.
I've never heard that.
You haven't?
No.
We need to start hitting your website.
I don't know how true that is, but I've read that before, that the dollar sign is a U overlaid on top of an S. That it evolved from that.
No, it's a Christian symbol of prosperity. God wants us to be prosperous.
God wants us to be happy.
Mm-hmm. And he wants me to invest in shady dealings to make me happy. Thank you, God.
Beer is proof that God loves us and wants us to be happy.
Here's to Ben Franklin.
Here's to Ben Franklin.
I would love to have had a beer with that dude. No, Rob.
All right.
Oh, yeah.
On that happy note, I will remind everybody once again to send us your comments. Feedback at MidwestPeaceProcess.com or visit us on Facebook. Leave your comment there. We'd appreciate hearing from you. Maybe Rob and Jeremy will make up before next episode.
Not bloody likely.
Thanks everybody for listening. We'll see you next time.
Good night.
Bye now.
Stay right.